This is Ben Fettle at BenFettle.com, and I'm talking today with Matt Glogley, who is a renegade Christian entrepreneur. And today we're going to talk about actual biblical examples of sales, persuasion, and marketing that people in the Old and New Testaments had used, not necessarily for selling, but just basic general persuasion principles that you can apply to your business today. And without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to Matt. And Matt, take it from there.
That's it. You're not going to ask me any questions. I just got to, you know, flow with it.
You got to let the Spirit talk. Don't you remember Mark 13?
You know what? That wasn't on the milk bottle this morning when I was doing my. That wasn't in my handout today for my 10 minutes of Bible study. It was shaving or something or whatever. No, yeah, I mean, you know, this is kind of, you know, it's funny because we've talked about this, you know, a couple of times, and we've always just kind of thrown some things out. So Ben, like, actually forced me. He said, so, like, do you have a list of 10? So I guess what I'm going to go through is I have a bunch of things down. They're not, like, in any catchy bullet points, and sometimes I'm going to fumble on the biblical reference, but I'll get the right book. Get the right verse. So you'll have to go find it on your own. So as you can tell, I'm not theologically trained, folks. The only time I've been to seminary is when I was a bartender. If I'm Irish, you're either going to be a priest or a bartender, and there's an argument that they're one and the same. It's amazing what people will tell a bartender. It's amazing what things they'll confess or share that's in their heart. They're probably more real when they're in a bar than they are in church. Okay, so where do you want to start with this thing?
You said you had Old and New Testament examples, so you wanted to start with the Old and work our way up?
Yes, we'll go Old Testament before the cross. And some of these are going to be some marketing, and I can't help but some of them will be a little bit kind of some basic business principles as well, but probably one of the biggest marketing lessons that I see in the Bible, and specifically this is in the book of Ecclesiastes. I always mispronounce that. Somebody will write an email about that. And I can't remember where it is, but it is about casting your bread on the water, is that in order for you to get something, you have to go out and do something. You've got to go out and you've got to, and I'm looking for it. You can hear me flipping the pages. But basically, the whole concept is that you've got to be marketing every single day. And as I work with business owners, and some Christian, most not, most people don't do something every single day from the standpoint of marketing their business. And that's something that I learned, is I do something every day. My goal is to prospect, write a blog post, do an email to the list, do something every single day. My goal is to spend 2.5 to 3 hours a day feeding the system, doing something to convert the leads that are coming in. And a lot of, in today's digital age, everything is kind of really automated on our end, but with Google and with SEO and with the magazines and all that stuff. But people just don't do enough to market. They do like one little thing. And what Solomon is sharing with us in this book is specifically, you've got to do something every single day. You've got to constantly be casting your bread upon the water. So that's kind of my first big one. You got any comments?
I guess God would be a big advocate of a daily email then, or daily blog post, or a daily something every day, in either written, audio, maybe a podcast, video, or something every day. How powerful just a daily email is, or a daily podcast, or a daily video, or something daily, daily article. It all kind of goes hand in hand with what you were just saying.
That's the thing, is you got to be doing something every single day. And kind of the subset of that I want to put in there is, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs get caught into this trap, is the same thing in the book of Ecclesiastes. It says two are better than one, because if one falls down, there's another one to pull you up. If you're cold at night, the other one will keep you warm. And while this is not necessarily a marketing principle, I think it's a business principle that people should abide by, is you never want to do this alone. And I'm a firm believer of partners/partnerships, because I find that when I'm having a bad day or a down day, then there's somebody else there to pick me up. And I think that's just real key to have. And that's kind of really, I guess, an offshoot of the two that I found in there. You got any thoughts on those? And then I've got one more in the Old Testament that I want to share, which ties into Jesus' perspective. And then we're going to talk about the Apostle Paul, which is really kind of the big crescendo of the whole thing.
Yeah, I was just thinking back to how, but it seems like a lot of the people God called, he didn't have them do everything alone. I mean, Moses had Aaron. And there's other examples of this, but none of these guys are really loners in that sense where they did everything by themselves. It's almost like you only have, everybody's got their own unique gift, and when you can combine that gift with somebody else's gift, that's when things really happen, not when we're just trying to do it all by ourselves. For example, I could start a business, and I could try to do the traffic and the lead generating and the copywriting and the content creation, but I'm really only good at the copywriting part, and I'd probably fail miserably at the other parts.
from my standpoint in my business, I'm not an exceptional copywriter. I can write, like, basic copy, but it's for me, it's about converting them into a buyer. That's the unique skill set that I bring. So, yeah, that's good. All right, so let's go into this one is going to be Old Testament, New Testament. My wife was, we were in the car together this morning, and I was telling her about this call, and she said, well, what are you going to talk about? And I said, well, I really, frankly, don't know yet. I said, but I have a couple of basic ideas. And she goes, well, tell me, what are some of the marketing lessons? So I told her the first one. And then I told her this one. I said, honey, do you remember watching the Ten Commandments as a kid growing up? Like the big, I always thought it was funny that you watched the Ten Commandments during Easter. I'm watching a Jewish show during a pagan holiday. And so she said, yeah, I remember watching the Ten Commandments. I said, do you remember when Charlton Heston, as Moses, went to Pharaoh's place of business? And he went into Pharaoh's place, and he was relatively unannounced. He was unwanted, and he tried to convert Pharaoh's heart with amazing feats of strength, if you will. And all it did was further cement Pharaoh deeper into his belief that there is no God. Makes the Nile bleed, frogs fall from the sky, I forget what else, all the things. And a big marketing mistake that I see people make, and the lesson that you take, is most business owners go in with a belief that everybody needs what they have. And so what they try to do, they spend all their time, money, and energy trying to convert the most skeptical of the skeptical when they aren't spending their time going picking the easy fruit. So there's an Old Testament example of how Moses, even with God's incredible miracles, couldn't convince Pharaoh to let his people go with all these incredible miracles. And then if you look at it from Jesus' standpoint, Jesus didn't send his message to the Pharisees. When he did, Jesus got frustrated. And Jesus' message was best received by the people that were looking to fill a hole in their heart, that they knew they had a problem and they knew they were looking for a solution. So the marketing lesson in this is this, is when you market, first and foremost, target those who have a burning desire for a solution. I just had lunch today with a guy, and his business idea wasn't bad, but there was no proof that anybody wanted it. He thought it was a unique idea because nobody was already doing it, to which my answer was, well, the reason why nobody's doing it is you can't make any money doing it. Nobody wants it. And I think it's a big mistake that a lot of people make is they try to come up with the big thing that nobody realizes that they wanted. When in reality, Jesus made a great example out of this of saying, look, I'm going to give the people exactly what they want, and I'm going to go out and give it to the people who are most hungry for it. Yeah, think about all the different people that Jesus talked to and that he touched, figuratively, spiritually. But think about everybody. They were absolutely dying for a miracle. They were so hungry for what he had that they would work their way through the crowd like the woman did and just touch his robe. And those are the type of people that you want to target with your marketing. You don't want to target the Pharisees who think they already have all the answers. Those are the worst people in the world to sell. You want to target the golfer who's tried everything to get rid of his slice, the guy or gal who's trying to lose weight, who's tried to do everything to lose weight. And when you look at it biblically, and you can look at it throughout the Old Testament and up throughout the New Testament, and specifically in the life of Jesus, who did he hang out with? He hung out with the people who were hurt the most. And too many marketers try to hang out with the people who are hurt the least, and it backfires on. Well, yeah, Jesus was admonishing the Pharisees, and he said, well, why are you hanging out with the hookers and the tax collectors and the unsavory characters? And he's like, well, those are the people that need us most. Which leads me to another point of, well, many times the last people I want to hang out with is other Christians. I want to hang out with the people who are hurting the most because they're the people who need them and need that salt and light in their life. I mean, that's a whole other topic, but again, my standard joke is, if I'm going to have people over to my house, the last people I want to have over are the Christians. I don't know what I'd call that marketing lesson or what the bullet point on that would be, but I think you get the general idea. The next one I have written down is Ben and I will talk about marketing from the standpoint of direct response. You got to have a great headline. You got to have a great bullet point. You got to have all this stuff in order for it to work. But there's another marketing lesson that is a bit intangible that I think a lot of people miss. And in today's day and age, business is about what you can get. And Jesus spoke about this in Mark, the 4th chapter. I do have this one right, and it's verse 21 is where it starts, and I'm reading from the Message. Jesus went on, does anyone bring a lamp home and put it under a wash tub or beneath the bed? Do you put it up on the table or on the mantle? We're not keeping secrets. We're not telling them. We're not hiding things. We're bringing them out into the open. Are you listening to this? Really listening? Listen carefully to what I'm saying and be wary of the shrewd advice that tells you how to get ahead in the world on your own. Giving, not getting, is the way. Generosity begets generosity. Stinginess impoverishes. Now, we could go on like this whole topic about tithing and offerings and giving and all that other fun stuff. And this example I'm going to give is really prevalent in the world that Ben and I live in and work in the direct response world. If you want to get time with a big name, you've got to jump through a lot of hoops to get to them. And while I agree with that conceptually, I don't agree with that biblically, because you didn't have to jump through hoops to get to Jesus. You didn't have to jump through hoops to get to the apostles. People could have direct access. That's the whole beauty of why Christ came, is that we now have a local call to heaven to talk to the Lord. It's no longer a collect call or a toll call like the way it was in the Old Testament. And so most business owners, from a marketing standpoint, their marketing is focused on getting. I like to position our business as a marketing lesson is giving. My basic philosophy is this, is that if somebody wants to talk with me, I'm more than willing to talk with them. I'm more than willing to get on the phone with them for 15 minutes, even if they're not a perfect prospect. Now, I know that's like really counterintuitive to what a lot of people have learned, but the Bible is very clear. We are here to serve our fellow man, and generosity begets generosity. Now, I don't go at it with an ulterior motive. I'll have a number of phone calls throughout the week. I know the person's not going to be a client of ours. I know that they can't afford to hire us. I know that they're not the target market that we have. But I'm willing to spend 15 minutes on the phone with them. I'm willing to take that time out of my day, because when you just never know how that conversation is going to positively impact somebody else. And so when I sell, I take that same approach. My role is to bless that other person. And I tell them that. When I'm doing a sales call, and we have a process that people, when they do get to me and they're a targeted customer, and I let them know, say, look, I want to be really clear about the purpose of this call. My purpose of this call is to serve you. If I can help you solve some business problems, I'm more than happy to do it. And if it leads to you hiring us, fantastic. If it doesn't, fantastic. But let me help sow into your business. And if I can't solve your problem, or if we're not a good fit, I'm going to point you in the direction of somebody who can. And Ben, it's amazing how that changes the tone of a conversation right off the bat. At first, they're like really leery. But I'm like, no, I'm dead serious. My role here is to help you, is to serve you. And, yeah, I'm taking 30 minutes out of my day. So what? I mean, it's not all about charging and getting as much money as you possibly can. I'll never forget this, as I was going through some business stuff over the last number of years. And over time, the Lord just brought me to a place of keep bringing me back to that verse of love your neighbor as you love yourself. And over time, I'd like to tell you that God spoke to me. He didn't. Everybody goes, what does his voice sound like? And,
or George Burns.
George Burns. Yeah. So Lord's just kind of taking me through this, and he said, he has me unwrapping love your neighbor as you love yourself, which is actually another marketing principle that I have. And he said, Matt, how much do you love yourself? Now, the answer to that question is, I think I'm pretty good. I think I'm pretty cool. I think I'm kind of a big deal. And so he just starts taking me through this process of unwrapping that, and he said, do you love your neighbor? I'm like, well, yeah, I love my neighbor. Well, would you love your neighbor if your neighbor was a homosexual? Would you love your neighbor if he was a homosexual and he had a live-in person, mate, significant other, partner, and they invited you to the wedding? Would you love your neighbor on the other side if she was a single mom and had a boyfriend and got knocked up and got pregnant and she had two other kids by her other husband in the house? Would you love your neighbor across the street if he was an atheist? Would you love this person and that person? And he kept saying, well, would you love them? Yes. And then finally, but would you love them as you love yourself? And so as I started to unwrap that over the course of like 12 to 18 months, it really started to take on this whole other genre and whole other meaning to me. And it took me to this place of, I used to have contempt for the person who didn't have money to hire me. Now I have love and compassion for the person who can't hire me. And Ben, I'll tell you, from the standpoint of selling, and like what you do and what we do for what we charge for our services. I mean, to hire us for a year is like $100,000 or more, and our partnership program is significantly higher, and there's a lot. And so there's always a list series of phone calls that I have to go through. And when I started approaching those calls with love in my heart for my person and not looking at their credit card or the balance in their bank account, or I started looking at it and I wasn't saying, oh, geez, we land this customer, it's $10,000 a month or $15,000 a month or whatever it is. When I started taking the approach of, I'm just going to love them and I'm going to love them well. I'm going to love them as I love myself. I'm going to treat this person as my neighbor. We didn't close any more business. It wasn't the magic secret sauce that all of a sudden took us from 100,000 to 100 million. But I will tell you this, I enjoyed the conversations even more. I enjoyed the process that I was in with those people. And some of those folks aren't even clients and they've become friends. And I've always said, look, if you got a question, call me. I'm more than happy to answer it for you. And I think this whole thing of just loving unconditionally, loving people where they are in their process, changes the way you write copy. It changes the way I do my sales calls. It changes the way I deal with a difficult vendor. Not every time. I'm a human being. I have my moments where I'm not too nice. But from a marketing standpoint, it just completely changes. And I see this in your copy. You don't write hype copy, but it's almost like you are writing copy almost from like a love standpoint of saying, hey, let me share some real information with you. Let me share with you what the real deal is. And people read that. They see through it. And that authenticity really plays out well. I remember Gary Halbert, when he was still on the earth, he took us through this, and he take out two pieces of paper, and you're going to write two letters to your mom. So this version is for those of you that hate your mother. Second version is for those of you that love your mother. And he said, you've got to write that letter like it's you're writing it to your mom. And from a marketing standpoint, I don't want to use any language. I don't want to use any tactics, any neurolinguistic programming stuff. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. But it's the intent of it. I'll paint an example I think that most people can understand. Everyone digs sex, right? Sex is really enjoyable. God created it, right? And when you have love in your heart for the other person, sex turns into intimacy. It turns into this incredible thing. When you don't have love in your heart for the other person, it turns into pornography. The point is, when we sell just for the sake of selling, and when we market just for the sake of marketing, and we have contempt for the other people, it's pornography. When we have love and compassion and mercy for the person of where they are right now, then it becomes intimacy. And it completely transforms the conversation. It completely transforms the relationship, which will lead me into my next point. But that's probably the best picture that I can paint in. So that brings to the next one. And this is a big shift that I've made in my marketing over the last 2 years. And so that people understand, I mean, I've been a front-of-the-room pitch guy and worked in a number of different niches and been in the direct response world for, I don't know, 7 years. So I've got a lot of different experiences in this. I used to be just about the sale. And again, this is going to kind of piggyback into what we were just talking about. But if I'm going to be marketing biblically, I'm going to care about building a true relationship with the people that I want to do business with. So again, it comes with no agenda. If I have true love in my heart, if I really do love my fellow man, a relationship takes time to build. Now, let me give you an example of my marriage. My wife, Sarah, and I have been married 18 years. We've been together 20, right? 20, 21 years. So when we first met, we met in college. We met in a bar, and yes, we'd been drinking. She lived across the street from me. Now, I had a reputation at that time of being a bit of a playboy, if you can say that, and talking about biblical marketing. I was very concerned about the number of notches on my bed. I wasn't really concerned about anything else. So I meet this gal, and I can tell immediately that she's somebody that I'd like to bring home to mother. Like, this is somebody I would want to raise my kids. The other ones, you wouldn't even want her to be around children. But she was dating somebody else at that time. And instead of me pushing to close the deal and get her into bed, I took time to build that relationship. We went out on like 3 dates before I kissed her. I wasn't aggressively trying to get her into the bedroom. I'm just being real with folks. I mean, this is my pre-Christian days, and frankly, I probably know quite a few Christians that did this when
they were in college. I don't think too many people are judging you right now listening to this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just being real. But I took time to build that relationship and to nurture that relationship. And all of a sudden, and this was in March, by the time June rolled around, and she didn't really, this other guy she was dating, he wasn't really serious, and there were a lot of guys that were interested in her, and I just kept sticking around. And when I would see her at the bar in the local small college that we went to, she might have been there with another guy that was interested in her that she was casually dating. And I would just go up and I'd say hi to him, and I'd say hi to her, and I'd talk to him a little bit. And then I'd go on my merry way. If I saw Sarah and she was with a group of her sorority sisters on campus, I'd come over and I'd say hi. I didn't have an agenda. I just came over and I said hi because, again, I had love in my heart for her. And over time, what this showed was that I was different than the other guys that were knocking on her door that were interested in dating her. And I'll never forget one time standing on the porch and Sarah lived across the street from me, and we were talking, and all of a sudden one of her ex-boyfriends, who was still kind of sort of floating around in the picture a little bit, shows up, and he's like, I gotta talk to you right now. And Sarah looked at me, and I said, hey, no worries. Go talk to him. It's fine. Call me when you're done. And she said at that moment, she knew that we were going to be married. And biblically, what this is the Bible is about relationships. Many people, when it comes to their marketing, they're concerned about the Old Testament rules. I got to do this to get that. If I do X, Y, and Z, see, that's the Old Testament. If I do X, Y, and Z, I'm going to get this. But when you have a relationship with somebody, you do something and you have no expectations of what the result is going to be. Now, this is really kind of below some people's theology, because this goes against the attraction strategy. This goes against the name it and claim it theology that's out there in the Christian world. This goes against the whole thing of pay it forward. See, in all those instances, the ulterior motive is that you have something that you're looking to get. In the Bible, Jesus poured into people's lives, so did John, so did Paul, so did all the apostles. They poured into people's lives with no expectation whatsoever of any return on their investment. Again, they did it because of love. The Old Testament is about rules, okay? And rules without relationship equals rebellion, okay? Rules without a relationship equals rebellion. The New Testament is, to heck with the rules, I'm going to love you no matter what. I am going to love you no matter how much of a moral deadbeat you are. I'm going to love you even if you think about this. God still loves you even if you don't accept his son. Think about that. Wrap your arms around that and then apply that to your business. God loves the drunk who's doing heroin as much as he loves the guy who's sitting in the pew every single Sunday. And if you don't believe me, think about this. What if those two people were your kids? Would you love one child less than the other? No. All you got to do is look at the prodigal son to answer that. The one son sticks around. He's the good son. The other son goes out. He blows his inheritance. He's wine, women, fast cars or fast chariots or horses or whatever it was at that time. Winds up working in the pig stall. And yet when he comes back, the father runs to greet him because he's so happy that he has returned. His love in his heart never stopped. And so from a relationship standpoint, in your marketing, you got to be willing to market to that person from now until the end of this time, and for them to reject you, because that's what God does to us. He's willing to market to us, to send his message over and over and over again to us, and yet he's willing to do that even if we never say yes. In the case of the prodigal son, the one son wanted his inheritance now, and so the father gives him his inheritance, gives 50%, he goes and he blows it, and so the older son is still there, and he's doing everything his father has asked him to do, and so now the younger son comes back. And his father welcomes him back with open arms, right? Which means that the older son's inheritance that was 50% is now 25%, because the younger son's now going to get half of what's left. You know? And here he is. He's being the good kid. And so from a marketing standpoint, folks, you never, ever know. I can tell you right now, I have people that will say, I've been on your list for 3.5 years, and I'm ready to do business with you now. It just never ceases to amaze me. And that's because biblically, I do not look at them as a transaction. I look at them as a living, breathing human being. And I'm more concerned about the relationship than I am about the results. All right, so let's talk about this a little bit. And that is, again, I'd like to put this in context. So Paul's kind of like Elvis Presley of his day. Everybody knows who he is. He just didn't have like the black leather suit or the jungle room. Paul is known before he even gets into a town. Everybody knows who Paul is. He's kind of a big deal. In that day and age, there's no email, there's no cell phones, there's no iPods, iPhones, iPads, computers, there's no internet. Al Gore hadn't been born yet, so the internet hadn't been invented. There's no mobile marketing, there's no fax machine, there's no telemarketing, there's no direct mail. The printing press wasn't invented in the 1400s, which is, you know, why Martin Luther was able to get his 95 theses out so quickly, because they had just invented the printing press.
It's so, like the internet of its time.
Yeah. I mean, so you couldn't, unless you were well, I mean, to get paper and ink to write something out, and then the ability to write something and to convey it on a piece of paper was an exceptional skill. So when Paul was in a Roman prison and he wrote Romans, or when he wrote 1 Corinthians and he wrote it to the church at Corinth. So imagine this. So in 1 Corinthians, it's the people of Corinth, and they had this reputation in the ancient world as an unruly, hard-drinking, sexually promiscuous bunch of people. Sounds like today, huh? When Paul arrived at the message and many of them became believers in Jesus, they brought their reputations with them right into the church. Okay, so Paul was their pastor, and then he left. And so this first letter that he wrote to them is about his pastoral response, affectionate, firm, clear, and unswerving in the conviction that God is among them. And in this, he was talking about how Jesus is revealed and present in the Holy Spirit, and that continues to be the central issue in their lives, regardless of how much of a mess they have made of things. And so this is a letter to them that he's kind of admonishing them. They basically go back to their old ways after he left. So for Paul to write this, you got to think about what he had to go through. He had to acquire paper. He had to acquire ink. He would dictate this to a person, and they would write it out, and he had to think out exactly what he was going to say, because if they made a mistake, he couldn't just tear it up and start over again because paper was so hard to get a hold of. It would then be sent to them, so there was usually one, maybe two copies, and it was sent to them, and when it would come, everybody would stop what they are doing, and they would gather, and they would listen to somebody read the letter to them. So they didn't have billboards, they didn't have CNN, they didn't have the 5,000 media messages like we have today. And so Paul was really the first direct mail person. He heard about an issue, and then what he did was he wrote specific to that issue. Now, if you look at the way that he wrote his letters, he always started out his letters in humility, and he always started out his letters in love. He didn't start out admonishing them right away, okay? So they'd go through this. Now, this would be a big deal that he would send this letter. And these things are long. You know, Corinthians is, I'm flipping through it, 16 chapters. So I'd love today when I hear people say, well, Matt, you mean you're going to email somebody once a week? Isn't that a little rude? Don't you think that's a little bit over the top? My response is always, well, Paul did it, and he had to do it twice to the church at Corinth because they didn't get it the first time. Because right after 1 Corinthians comes 2 Corinthians. And this is Paul going back to them. No sooner did Paul get one problem straightened out in the Corinth church than three more appeared. This is the beginning of 2 Corinthians. So the reason for Paul's second letter to the Corinthians was that they were attacking his leadership. And in his first letter, though, he wrote most kindly and sympathetically. He didn't mince words. He wrote with a confident authority of a pastor who understands the ways God's salvations work, okay? But they bucked his authority and they accused him of inconsistencies, impugned his motives, questioned his credentials. They didn't argue with what he had written. They simply denied his right to tell them what to do. So here's this guy who came in. He is educated, like he is the Jew's Jew, and then he comes to Christ. I mean, he is one of the most learned and educated men of his day. And he writes this letter to them, and he admonishes them, and what do? They thumb their nose at them, right? Some, maybe like 2% got it then.
Yeah.
Like the other 98%. He's like, no, I'm not going to believe that. So what did he do? Paul was the original multi-step marketer. He wrote a second letter to them. He didn't care that they were upset. He didn't care that he offended them. He didn't care that he was speaking truth to them and they didn't believe it. He went at it again. And to me, that's like a big lesson for us from a marketing standpoint of saying, look, there's a reason why you have to mail multiple times. Now, Paul is doing this in an age where there is no other form of communication, that a letter is a big deal. And yet, in our businesses, we go, oh, I could never email every single day. What about those people that opt out? Well, who cares? What about those people who stay in? You know, we'll send 18,000, 40,000 emails out in a day, and we might get 40 opt-outs. Big deal. Who cares? I really don't care. But I want to keep hammering home that message. And you'll notice that Paul did this. He did it in 1 Corinthians, and he always goes back to the fundamentals. He just reads it in a different way, which is another marketing lesson. You never, ever stop marketing those fundamentals. Now, you know these letters were shared and this information was shared, but he had to send letters back to the church at the Galatians, the church at Ephesus, the church, the Philippians. He had to do it to the Thessalonians not once but twice. He had to do this to Timothy once and twice, and Timothy was a guy that was studying under him. I mean, just time and time again, you see that Paul had no issue with continuing to communicate to the people that needed to hear this message and communicate to them over and over and over again until they got it. So if I want to say the marketing lessons of the Apostle Paul, is that, if I could summarize them, is that, one, he always started his letters in humility. Two, he always moved to love. And then third, he started working his way through the particular issues one by one. And he would knock them down with proof, which to me is a great way to market. Is if you come in your, let's say, from a marketing copy standpoint, and you say, hey, I'm just a regular Joe just like you are. And the reason why I'm doing this is because I want other people to know what I have found out. And then you start lining up each one of the individual issues, and you line up an issue, and then you refute it. You know, you show how Christ on the cross, this is what Paul did, how Christ on the cross came to solve that problem. And that's what he does in every single one of his letters. I mean, it took him 16 chapters to lay this out in 1 Corinthians. I mean, here are the number of topics that he hits in Corinthians. The cross. He goes into the mystery of sex. He goes into whether or not to be married or to be single. Freedom with responsibility. To honor God. Spiritual gifts. The way of love. Prayer language. The resurrection. And that, oh, by the way, I'm going to come see you. You know, he comes in with a close. And at the end of it, he comes full circle in all of his letters, just like we do in marketing, as he comes into a close and he goes, hey, Timothy shows up, take good care of him. Hopefully I'm going to be there soon. I appreciate your love offering that you've given, da-da-da-da. I can't wait to see you guys. Love you. I mean, there's even P.S.s, like in chapter 16. And so for us as marketers, if Paul can do this 2,000 years ago, and he realized the importance of laying out a well-documented position and argument and working his way through it point by point and laying out and always bringing them back to the basic solution, and that is the cross, the love of Christ. Why can't we keep doing that if we're selling weight loss or vitamins or a solution to somebody getting more customers or copywriting skills or whatever it is that whatever you're selling, you've got to hit those points dead on. You've got to be willing to prove that your solution provides that. And you've got to be willing to keep going through that and be patient to go through that. And then at the end, you've got to be willing to mail them again and again and re-email them again and again and fax them again and again and make an offer again and again. Because it just never stops. Paul had to do it 2,000 years ago to do it twice. Who's to say that we don't need to do it 200 times in order for people to finally see the light?
Can you imagine if Paul had email? You know?
Yeah. No kidding. Imagine text messaging in the Roman prison.
Twitter.
Twitter. I'm still in chains. I'm still in chains.
Prison.
Gnawing at my ankle.
They just gave me a hunk of bread.
With worms in it.
Can't eat this.
Yeah.
And then there'd be like a lesson.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's kind of like false doctrine, you know, 140 characters.
Yeah. Can you imagine Paul being limited to 140 characters?
Oh, man, that would probably drive him insane.
It probably would. Ben, I mean, I know these aren't like specific, do this, do that, do this. Hey, here's what I've learned in my life. You may agree with this, the folks that are listening to this, you may not. I think if Jesus came back today, he wouldn't be happy with what our worship has become. And we've made it all about him when he wants it to make it all about the other people. As a Christian business guy, if you will, on our site, ChristianBusinessDaily.com, we talk about this on a constant basis. Christ, I think, would be upset with the number of rules that we've set upon ourselves to try and walk as he walked. That's the whole point that he came, is that he realized that we couldn't handle the 436 laws that were laid out in the Old Testament. And so he came and said, you know what? Just love each other well and live free. And so the lesson for me of where I've gotten to in this place in my life is there's a lot of great marketing principles out there. There's a lot of great marketing rules and do's and don'ts. And you buy these kits and here's my 500 rules that I never violate every time that I market. I think that if you just come out in authenticity and love, the cross allows us to be true-faced, authentic with each other. And the reason why we're allowed to be authentic is we are told not to judge each other. And when we do that in our marketing, when we become authentic, when we become real, we become more like Christ, and people are attracted to authenticity. They are attracted to when we share the realness of who we are through our marketing whether it's personality-based marketing or whether it's, you know, corporate-based marketing or product-based marketing or whatever it is. But people enjoy that realness and that authenticity. And at first, they're not going to believe you. Second, they're going to think you have an ulterior motive. But as they get to know you, they're going to realize that you're doing it because you love them unconditionally, whether they buy from you or not. And to me, that's incredibly freeing. I don't get as concerned about the results of my marketing as I do about the impact of my marketing. And I'm more concerned about the relationships that we build long-term than I am about that result on my bottom line each and every single day. So here's my challenge to you. For the next 6 months, what would happen if you loved your insert neighbor, business associate, prospect as much as you love yourself? And I think if you ask God to help you wrap your arms around that and unravel that of how that plays out in your life, I think there's an opportunity for a dramatic change of the way that you view the people who are coming into your list. So, you know, as they're listening to this, folks, just unwrap that for 6 months and keep asking God to show you what that looks like in your marketing. I'd love to hear some of those comments and post that, what that looks like to you, because I'd love to hear that. Best thing to do is there's two sites they can go to. The first is ChristianBusinessDaily.com, ChristianBusinessDaily.com, and that's owned with my business partner Bob Rignaris and I, and we do podcasts, and we'll put this interview up there, and we post things when we feel like posting it, and you can comment there. We'll put a link on this that if they want to post a comment there, you know, we'll have this audio up there maybe or something like that. We can figure all that out. That's one way. The other is our site, which is CapstoneStrategicPartners.com, CapstoneStrategicPartners.com, and that's more of like a corporate-y site. But if you really want to post a comment on Christian Business Daily about this topic, I mean, there's a place to post a comment. Bob and I see it all the time, and if you want to speak specifically to me about something or post a comment, I'll see it. If you don't want me to share it with the rest of the world, please put that in there, and I won't, but I will reply to you. You post on ChristianBusinessDaily.com, I will reply to you. So, and if it requires a phone call, and I think that makes sense, then, hey, we'll do a phone call.
I assume you're not afraid of anyone who would disagree with anything you said. In fact, would actually welcome them to comment, because you know how Christians are, you know.
Please, my whole goal is to tip over the tables in the temple of life. I mean, I'm on Facebook. Just type in Matt Gallogly, G-I-L-L-O-G-L-Y. We have a fan page for Christian Business Daily on Facebook. I'll respond to you, folks. And look, you won't be the first person who sends me a long dissertation as to why I'm wrong. Understand that I'm a recovering bartender. I haven't been to seminary, not a theologian. I don't even know how to spell it. The only Greek I've ever known was the guy that worked in Greek town and when I was in my fraternity. I don't know any Hebrew. I don't care to ever know any Hebrew. I failed Latin miserably. I got a D- in it. I'm just a normal guy who's just trying to figure this out like the rest of you.